It's Ticklish Business, the podcast devoted to honoring and deconstructing the world of classic cinema. As always, I'm your host, Kristen Lopez. And the first of a four-week Halloween tribute starts off with this week's guest, Carrie Bible, who joins me to talk about her work as a tour guide for the legendary Hollywood Forever Cemetery. The oldest cemetery in Los Angeles, and the only one located in Hollywood itself, Hollywood Forever was founded in 1899 on 100 acres by F.W. Samuelson, who originally named it the Hollywood Cemetery. Pretty plain. In 1920, Paramount Studios bought 40 acres of land, though bodies were never actually buried there. In fact, Hollywood Forever gives you a pretty great overview of Hollywood itself, as it's sandwiched between the Paramount Studios and the Hollywood sign. Though a complete listing of which stars were buried first isn't forthcoming, we know one of the earliest to make a splash by being buried at the then Hollywood Memorial Park was silent actor Rudolph Valentino, whose untimely death at the age of 31 caused national mourning and even a few suicides. Valentino was buried in a borrowed crypt on the cemetery grounds, where he still resides to this day. For decades after, an unknown lady, known only as the Woman in Black, regularly visited the star's grave on the anniversary of his death, and a tradition somewhat similar still happens at the cemetery to this day. In 1999, millionaire and convicted felon Jules Roth purchased a majority stake in the cemetery after interring his parents there. Roth wasn't a popular figure, denying Gone with the Wind actress Hattie McDaniel, who had requested to be buried at Hollywood Forever, a plot because of segregation laws. The cemetery would be desegregated in 1959, and it wasn't until the 47th anniversary of her death that the cemetery could rectify their mistake and honor her with a cenotaph. As Roth continued to neglect the cemetery, it started to show on the grounds themselves. The crematory was shut down in 1974 after bricks started falling around those being cremated, one of whom was singer Cass Elliott. Families regularly complained to the California Cemetery Board about vandalism and continued disrepair, to the point that several prominent people once interred there, including Max Factor and his heirs, took their deceased relatives' remains to other cemeteries. That's not to say that Roth still didn't make money off of them, as he collected a $500 disinterment fee to keep the gates open. Roth started selling off pieces of cemetery lands, including the entire front of the cemetery, which is now peppered with strip malls. A 1986 class action lawsuit by several angry families and the 1994 Northridge earthquake only increased neglect further. When Roth died in 1988, it was discovered that over $9 million was missing from the cemetery's endowment care fund. The future looked bleak for Hollywood Forever, and it was facing bankruptcy. Eventually, it was purchased for just $375,000 by Tyler and Brent Cassidy, who invested millions in revitalizing it, redubbing it the now Hollywood Forever Cemetery. It plays movies, hosts concerts, and yes, even does tours. But you might be saying, you never mentioned who's actually buried there. Several prominent celebs are housed, but some heavy hitters in the classic film world include the aforementioned Valentino, Mel Blanc, studio head Harry Cohn, Cecil B. DeMille, Nelson Eddy, Janet Gaynor, Barbara Lamar, Jesse Lasky Sr. and Jr., Jane Mansfield, Adolph Monju, Paul Muni, Vampira herself, Myla Nurmi, Eleanor Powell, Tyrone Power, Carl Alfalfa Switzer, all three of the Talmadge sisters, director Edgar G. Olmer, and more. When I come back, guest Carrie Bible tells us about the secrets of Hollywood Forever Cemetery. Our first spooky episode of Ticklish Business sees us interviewing a unique classic film personality, the amazing Carrie Bible. Carrie, how are you?
I'm good.
Carrie is actually one of, well, I'd say she's the only, I don't know if you can tell me that there's more, tour guide for the Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
I know I'm the only.
But Carrie, for people who don't know who you are, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I am the tour guide at Hollywood Forever Cemetery. I've been giving tours there several times a month since 2002. And I've co-written two small film history books, Location Filming in Los Angeles, and more recently one called Hollywood Celebrates the Holidays. I also do a newsletter that comes out every week called Film Radar, and one called Film Radar Real Women with my friend Ray McDermott. We put those out together.
And I would recommend Carrie's book, but it's awesome. Carrie, we have to ask the obvious question. How did you get involved in being a cemetery tour guide? I'm assuming when you were little Carrie Bible as a child, you didn't look up at the sky and dream of one day doing this. Or maybe you did. I don't know. How did this all come about?
I don't know. Sometimes I think in life, you don't find things, they find you. I was born Halloween night. True story. And my mom and dad had a house, and we lived down the street from a cemetery. And so my brother and I actually played there. We rode our bikes there. It wasn't creepy or weird. It was down the street. It was a place to ride our bikes. And I thought it was a really beautiful place. And also, my mom and dad are really into history. So a lot of our vacations, we went to Civil War battlefields, cemeteries, and houses. And, you know, it's one thing to be in a classroom, but when you see the reenactors and you stand on the soil where it really happened, I have a pretty big imagination, so I could just in my head see all these things and hear all these things and just really imagine what it would have been like to be there. So I just developed this love of history. And when I was about, I think, 5 or 6, I saw Dracula with Bela Lugosi on television. It pretty much changed my life. I remember thinking, I want this. And I was so fixated on it. And I didn't really know what this meant, but I loved Bela Lugosi. I loved Dracula. It was almost like I was seduced by it in a way. I told my parents how much I loved it, and they were very supportive. They did not think it was strange, thank goodness. They were like, okay, well, if you like this, we'll go to the library. We'll get you lots of books about it. So I remember poring over books of Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff, Lon Chaney as a little girl. When I grew up, you didn't have DVD or even VHS in my earlier years. You had TV. So every Sunday, the horror movie matinee came on, and they'd show all these horror movies from the 30s, 40s. That was my gateway drug, if you will. Well, long story short, I got a degree in film. I moved out here in the year 2000 to Los Angeles. And I saw Hollywood Forever, and I just fell under the spell of it, as I hope everybody does who goes there. And I was like, wow, I wonder if they have a tour. And I asked, and they didn't. And then all these things started going through my head, and I was thinking, you know, maybe I could just do that. Maybe that person could be me. So I met with a historian who mentors me. I met with the head of the cemetery, and I've now been there since 2002. That's a long story way of saying that's how this all kind of came together.
What was your first tour like, taking people out there? And
well, what I did is I spent a month or two just preparing, researching, writing notes, reading things. I had several historians that I really respect that have been great and helpful to me. I had them take the tour and give me notes and give me feedback. I did a sample tour for the owner of the cemetery. Before I had the unsuspecting public take it, I really did a lot of preparation. So I was pretty prepared by the time I did my first one. I still had to have a big, huge pile of notes with a big binder clip on them for like the first year, just because it's 2 full hours plus of just a truckload of information. So for a while, I had to have my notes with me, but now I'm to the point where I can literally do it in my sleep, so I don't need that now. And I didn't have the binder at the time, so I assumed that everybody knew what these stars looked like, which I quickly figured out wasn't true. So now I have a binder, and I have a picture of a star and maybe a mini poster from, say, their most famous movie. That way people can look at the picture, look at the grave, and make the connection of who they're looking at.
You talked about the power and the, I would say, the majesty of Hollywood Forever, which, having taken the tour with you and seen the cemetery, I totally agree. It's lovely and it's amazingly lush and grand. But what is it in comparison to the Hollywood has so many different cemeteries? What is it about Hollywood Forever that makes it stand out for you?
There's so many things. First off, it's the only one in the heart of Hollywood. The rest of them are a little further out. And also, something is just so magical about standing at the entrance and you see all these palm trees line up. And right, the entrance lines right up with the Hollywood sign. And then you turn around and there's the Paramount Water Tower. So it's like all these things just line right up. And there's just something about it that's so magical and so beautiful. I've been doing tours there now 15 years. Oh my gosh, that's a long time. But yeah, and every time I'm there, I still feel that awe. Like, I don't ever take that for granted. I still feel like I just can't believe I get to be here. I can't believe. I don't know. I just love it so much.
I know you've been to the other cemeteries in LA, and I know most people would be surprised to know that not every big celebrity is in Hollywood Forever, even though it is the one most people think of. In comparison to Hollywood Forever, what do the other cemeteries, in your opinion, have to offer other than different stars? I know Marilyn is in Westwood, and then there's Forest Lawn. What do the other ones do for you, even though they don't have tours?
Well, Westwood's really tiny, so if people want to go there, it's only 4 acres, where Hollywood Forever is about 60. So if you're trying to look for stars and you're by yourself and you don't have a guide, if it's only 4 acres, there's a pretty good chance you're going to easily find them. There's a lot of interesting people at a lot of the other cemeteries too. There's a website called findagrave.com. I'm probably on there like every day. And several people that I'm friends with in the cemetery community have written different guidebooks about how to find different graves. So there's a lot of material and resources out there. But every one of these places is interesting. They all have interesting architecture. Every one of these graves, there's a story. So I always think about that.
In terms of the people that take the tour, what's the mix been like? Is it mostly older people? Do you get the young people who assume that it's not going to be older stars, or do you cater it to the tone? How do you judge an audience that shows up to take the tour?
That's a really good question. I do get a lot of seniors because I think I'm like a 100-year-old person inside a younger person's body. I get a lot of younger people. Sometimes it's a mix. It depends on the audience. Since I've done the tour for so long now, I don't have to focus as hard on what I'm saying per se, but I kind of look in people's eyes and look at their faces and pay attention to what they're responding to. And I do the tour sometimes according to that. Like, for example, I had a big group of teenage girls recently, and I was talking about Valentino, and I just looked at them, and I just see this sea of blank faces. And I thought to myself, okay, I'm bombing here. They don't know what I'm talking about. They're just not in any way connected to any of this. So I stopped myself, and I said, okay, I'm just going to stop here. What stars do you guys like right now? If you got up tomorrow morning, grabbed your iPhone, and your friend texted you that this huge star had died, what star would you just be absolutely? And they all said Beyonce. And I said,
Ooh.
all right, say tomorrow morning you woke up and she died. And I swear, one of the girls nearly started crying. And I'm like, no, I swear, if she didn't die, Beyonce's fine. But I just wanted to say, if you heard that news, how would that make you feel? And then they got quiet, and then they're like, oh. And then I think at that point, they sort of got it. They sort of thought, okay, because they were so young, and almost all of us have lived through a time when some star that we love died young, tragically, suddenly, whatever. But they were so young, they hadn't had that experience in life yet. They didn't have that reference point. So when we talked about Beyonce, I think that was going to go, okay, that would be horrible. Yeah, I think they got it at that point. If I have a really young audience, sometimes I'll have to connect the dots and say, well, this person was like the Jennifer Lawrence of their generation. You know what I mean? I feel silly doing it sometimes, but sometimes it's the only way I'm going to be able to. One day I had these two young girls, they were probably 19, 20 years old. They emailed me the day after the tour and they said, we're on vacation together from Scotland. We don't know anything about old Hollywood, but we took all these notes during your tour and we're going to watch all of these movies you mentioned. And I nearly cried. I was so happy. I was like, oh my gosh, that's why I do this.
When you bring up Valentino, which most people know the stories associated with him and the woman in black and all of that, but you and the cemetery actually do something really fun around his birthday. For people who don't know, can you describe how you honor Valentino?
Valentino died on August 23rd, 1926, in New York. Every year on August 23rd, we have a giant memorial service in the cathedral mausoleum where he's interred. And we have, gosh, over 200, 300 people in that room. We do a big service. It's put on by the Valentino Memorial Committee. They do a terrific job. They have singers, they have guest speakers, they have poetry reading. They screen movie clips. They do montages. They do all sorts of stuff. They have a big memorabilia display. And it's actually the longest continuing annual Hollywood event. It's been going on since 1926. It's not really morbid like people would think. It's a celebration of his work and his life and really his legacy. It's pretty amazing when someone's been passed away over 90 years and hundreds of people come out for that to see and remember them. It's a real testament to Valentino's staying power and his ability to fascinate people all these years later.
And of course, there is still a woman in black at these events. I'm not going to spoil it for people, but she shows up, correct?
Yeah. She shows up, roses in the 20s gown. And actually, this year was really cool. Spoiler, I've been the Lady in Black since I started the tour back in 02. And there's actually a new independent film that's being made about Valentino right now. And the Oscar-nominated actress Terry Moore is going to play the Lady in Black in this movie. And Terry Moore is fascinating. She worked with Tyrone Power. She worked with Mickey Rooney. She was involved with Howard Hughes. She has this incredible, fascinating life. She actually, as the Lady in Black, at the service this year. So she and I got to talk and spend time together. And it was really, really cool. So I'm so grateful to get to meet her and get to spend a little time with her.
What outside of Valentino, for people who are maybe on the fence or coming to visit, what or who can they expect to see? What's the Nickel Tour, I guess, for people listening?
Well, we have Marion Davies, Tyrone Power, Douglas Fairbanks Sr., Douglas Fairbanks Jr. We have a cenotaph for Hattie McDaniel, Jane Mansfield, and Johnny Ramone. Faye Ray is there, Janet Gaynor, Adrian, Don Adams from Get Smart, Estelle Getty from The Golden Girls. We have Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland. We have a pretty impressive star-filled lineup.
When you and I took the tour, Judy Garland was not officially announced as being at the cemetery, but now she is, and I'm assuming it's lovely.
It does. When she died, she was only 47, and she'd been married to this disco club manager or something very briefly when she died, and he wound up making all the decisions, even though he really didn't know her. And he put Judy at Ferncliff Cemetery in upstate New York. And her children, they want to be with her someday. And there's absolutely no room for anybody else in New York where Judy was. So Liza, Lorna, and Joe decided to have Judy disinterred from New York, flown to L.A. And she has an entire section now called the Garland Pavilion at Hollywood Forever. And she was flown out here in January. And on her birthday this past June, it would have been her 95th birthday, they had a private service with her children and grandchildren and different people at the cemetery. And then they showed The Wizard of Oz that night on the Fairbanks lawn, and the grave was unveiled. So now people can visit and leave flowers or leave whatever they'd like to leave. I love Judy so much. She just was absolutely an unparalleled talent. There's never going to be anybody else.
It's wonderful to know that she's there, as well as, it's not technically him, but Toto is also there as well, which,
yeah,
one of my favorite moments on the tour is the little Toto statue that is there, even though his story is horrible.
Oh, I know. I'm a huge dog person, so I love the Toto statue.
To preface, before people think that Toto died horribly, he did not. He died of old age, but if memory serves, technically his final resting place is where the freeway is now.
He passed away in 45, or she passed away in 1945, was buried on her owner's property in Studio City, and they paved over all of that to build the Ventura Freeway, and that's where Toto is resting under, although there's no way that's in peace. I think the tribute is definitely a beautiful addition to the cemetery.
Well, and I have to ask, because it's Halloween, you work in a cemetery. Have there been any spooky goings-ons that you've witnessed or heard about?
Actually, there haven't been. I get asked that pretty frequently, and I have theories on things, and my theory is if ghosts do exist, they're not going to come running when you call for them like a puppy would or something. Like, I've given tours to groups of Ghostbusters, and they'll bring their tape recorders and their equipment and all that, and they'll talk to the graves and call out for the ghosts. And I'm thinking to myself, that's so silly. They're not going to just come running when you call them. If I were a ghost, I would get people at the most shocking, vulnerable, and unsuspecting moment ever. Like when you get up at 2 in the morning to use the bathroom, boom, that's when I'd strike. Well, that's fun. It's not fun to show up when you're expected to show up, right?
I'm assuming people have claimed that there have been things happening there.
Yeah, there's been claims over the years. Someone claims that they've seen Clifton Webb wandering up and down the halls of the Abbey of the Psalms,
I would think
possibly, or
Clifton
he's
Webb would
wandered.
be doing something more exciting.
Yeah, right? And then people claim they've heard Virginia Rappe weeping. She's the girl who passed away after Roscoe Arbuckle's party. But again, I really don't give credence to that because, I mean, I've been there all hours of the day and evening over many years. I've never had any experiences myself. Also, I think they would haunt a place that was meaningful in their life, maybe not in their death. You'd haunt a place maybe where you worked, where you lived, where something happened to you, or to me, that would just make more sense.
I think people just assume that many dead people in one place. There has to be something. I know that you've shared stuff with me, but I don't know if you want to share it with others. But you have had the occasional, maybe not ghost sighting, but celebrity sightings who have taken your tour.
A few years ago, I had a private group tour, and the guy didn't tell me much other than it's a private tour, be here at this time. And I was like, okay. And I get there, and there's Emma Stone, Andrew Garfield, January Jones, and Christina Hendricks. I was just like, oh, okay. And they were actually with a huge group of people. I didn't want to be unprofessional, so I pretended I had no idea who they were, and I just gave them a tour like I would give everybody. I mean, I didn't do anything any different. I didn't act like I knew who they were, and it turns out that was a smart move because the guy who booked the tour said they didn't want to be bothered in any way. Christina Hendricks is so hypnotically beautiful. Like, I would start my spiel, and then I would look in her face and say, 1926, Valentino,
Can't blame you.
he did some stuff or something. Like, she's so pretty. I just couldn't even keep my composure very well.
But you did, which is half the battles.
I
You
did, yeah.
get a clap for that.
And then one day I was giving a tour and I was talking about John Huston and I turned around and Angelica was standing behind me and I almost had a heart attack. I was just like, oh my God. Like,
I would
wow.
have definitely had a heart attack because I'm not convinced that Angelica Houston is not also like half witch, having watched The Witches growing up. I would be in awe and I would love and respect her, but I would also be grossly terrified of her.
What was funny though is she was actually cleaning up her dad's grave. She was picking up leaves and weeds and straightening it up. Having worked as an assistant in the Hollywood world, usually people like that don't do these things themselves. They pay people like me to do them. To see an Oscar-winning actress plucking weeds, you just don't really see that. That was almost more strange to me than anything else.
Well, that brings up
Like,
a great
okay.
question because we've heard so much about the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and you hear these stories about the stars being destroyed and there's no money to actually fix them. But I'm assuming that with Hollywood Forever, having visited myself, I mean, it looks immaculate all the time. I'm assuming that there is 24/7 watch on some of these classic film stars' graves so that nothing ever goes to rot.
They do take really good care of the cemetery. I mean, it's very difficult when you've got 60 acres and you've got so many graves and grass, but they have a team of security guards. They've got a team of landscapers. They do a really outstanding job of being the guardians of these incredible people and their legacies, their histories, their graves. They do a terrific job.
Which was not always the case, if memory serves, from when it started.
Yeah, you have a good memory. Actually, there was a man who ran it from 1951 until 1998, and his name was Jules Roth. Starting in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, he let the place just go downhill, and he embezzled a lot of money. And at one point, just people started quitting or getting laid off all over the place. There's not enough money to pay people. So it did. I mean, I didn't grow up here and I didn't see this, but have got friends who grew up here and told me stories. I've talked to a guy who used to work at the cemetery in the 80s, and they confirmed that the place was just overrun with people vandalizing it and camping out there and doing all sorts of horrible stuff. 1998 happened. The cemetery was in bankruptcy when Jules Roth finally died. And Tyler Cassidy, our owner, he came in, and I think a lot of people saw that cemetery as just a decrepit, scandal-plagued disaster. And Tyler saw hope, and he saw real possibilities there. And He and his whole staff have just done an incredible job of literally breathing new life into this cemetery and making it one of the most beautiful and unique cemeteries, I would say maybe not just in America, but perhaps in the world.
You guys have a great animal contingent, peacocks and the occasional cat, squirrel, all of that. There's everything. It's not just a death situation. There's also a lot of beautiful flora, fauna, animals there as well. I was going to say, what is the best time to visit? I'm assuming any time, but do you have a particular favorite time of year to give the tours that you would recommend people come and try to make time for it?
When it's not burning hot as the Pacific, when it's like 99 degrees, it's so hard to give the tour when it's that hot. It's hard to think and concentrate. It's not pleasant physically when you're in a black gown and you're trying to recall this information and you're just sweating so profusely you can't function. Like last weekend was beautiful. It was probably like 70, 80 something, and it was so nice. And oh, whenever it's cool weather, that's just bliss for me.
I would also say don't go when it's raining. Traveling in a wheelchair over wet grass is not the funnest thing in the world, and it's a testament to Carrie's strength, athletic prowess that she was able to give me the tour whilst having to deal with mud traps and everything.
I have actually no athletic ability of any kind. I just wanted you to see the place so badly, and I didn't want you to not get to experience it.
I appreciate it. Is there a favorite, whether it's a grave or just spot in the cemetery that you love, not just necessarily to show people, but to just kind of stop and reflect?
Oh, there's many. I love being near the pond. Just something about the sound of the water in the pond, and we have all the ducks and the swans, and it's just so peaceful and it's so beautiful. So what you said a moment ago, there's a young man who tragically died young in an accident, and his parents are at the cemetery a lot. And his mother told me one day, she said, "We love it here because this place is about life. And this, the people, the events, the animals, the beauty, the flowers, the tree, it's just teeming with life." And I think she's right.
I think I told you when we went that it's one of those places where I would not feel uncomfortable just reading, just taking a spot and reading. It's very, very peaceful, obviously, because it's a cemetery, but it's very beautiful and ethereal as well. What can fans expect who might be stopping by in October for the Halloween season? I know the cemetery does so many events, but can you give us a little taste of what's going to be happening this month?
We have movie screenings at the cemetery. I'm not involved with that, but we do have those still. We have indoor and outdoor concerts year-round at the cemetery. We have a Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead. That is Saturday, October 28th, and it goes from 12 noon to 12 midnight. I always tell people to get your tickets early and also get there earlier in the day, because once the sun sets, it gets so crowded. It's hard to even move. So the earlier you go, the more you can see around the cemetery. And we have all sorts of dance performers, musicians, costumes, face painting, food. It's an incredible artistic event, and the work and the artistry people put into these shrines they build is absolutely incredible. I usually go, and it just never fails to amaze me how beautiful and how incredible it is. So I would definitely recommend going to Day of the Dead.
And I'm assuming you'll be giving tours as well throughout the month.
Yeah, I have tours on many Saturdays. October 21st, actually, I'm in the Art Deco Society, and we have an Art Deco cemetery tour on October 21st. It's totally different from my usual tour. Instead of me doing it the whole 2 hours or so, you get a different tour guide every grave. And we dress up in costumes, and we do like a living history presentation. So people talk as if they were that person. And that's a lot of fun as well. I've got a few private events I do at the cemetery, and then I've got Day of the Dead. I've got a bunch of tours. You can find those out at cemeterytour.com. So yeah, quite a bit going on throughout the month.
The last question I have is, you've talked about wanting to do more with the cemeteries in terms of getting them out there for people to see. Is there a cemetery that you have not visited yet that you would love to at some point?
I've been to all the ones in Hollywood area or Los Angeles. You know what I've always wanted to do? I've always wanted to go to the cemeteries in Salem, Massachusetts. That is on my bucket list. And I've never been to New England, actually. I think next year, I'm hoping a year from right now, I can do a little trip there and see the fall leaves and go to Salem and kind of get the whole New England thing. And plus, I mean, since that's one of the oldest parts of America, I'm sure the cemeteries there are absolutely incredible and very different from the ones here.
Well, next Halloween, I will have to interview you again and see if you made it out there.
I hope it happens. I hope it does.
That would
I
be
really do.
great. I would
Yeah.
throw out, and I told you this when we went on the tour, that if I could ever get to Père Lachaise and see where Jim Morrison is buried in France, it's on my bucket list at some point. I would have to conquer my fear of flying over the ocean, but it's on the list at some point. Listeners, you can send me your thoughts on cemeteries, dead celebrities, anything you want, really. You can email them to me at ticklishbiz@gmail.com and I will read them on a future episode. Once again, I'd love to thank the amazing Carrie Bible for joining us today. Carrie, where can fans get in touch with you on the internet?
Well, the best place would be cemeterytour.com. CEMETERYTOUR. Cemeterytour.com.
And you also do a Facebook group as well where you share information as well. I don't know if you want to throw that out.
If you go to cemeterytour.com and you click on the Facebook logo, I have a cemetery tour Facebook group. And I try to post an interesting fact about every day about somebody at the cemetery that is buried there that is a really interesting historic figure. So pretty much every day there's something up there. Hey, you can also find me there too. And I'm on Facebook under my name, Carrie Bible.
That'll close out this edition of Ticklish Business. You can listen to Ticklish Business a multitude of ways, either directly at ticklishbusiness.podbean.com, via Stitcher Radio or Player FM, or on iTunes. If you are listening via iTunes, please help the podcast out by leaving a rating and review. As always, you can contact me directly at ticklishbiz, that's BIZ, at gmail.com, or visit me at my official website where I discuss classic films regularly, journeysinclassicfilm.com. The podcast is also on Twitter at ticklish_biz. Want to listen to episodes early or have me review your favorite film? Then consider supporting Ticklish Business via Patreon. I have a wealth of amazing perks, and all your donations go right back into making Ticklish Business the premier classic film podcast. I would like to give a shout out to new patron Peter Bryant. Thank you for supporting the show. If you're interested in becoming a patron, just head over to patreon.com/ticklishbiz. Next time, Halloween continues with a look at the 1974 Mel Brooks horror comedy, Young Frankenstein. Till next time.